Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and John and I have just been trying to bring up maps and things to try to understand there's anger on Facebook. You won't believe it, but there's some angry people on Facebook, and a lot of people have been sent maps from the regional council about a draft Waikato Regional Council plan. And you ready to chat, John? You got your stuff ready?
I think I've found the right place on the map, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, welcome to the show. I actually can't find a lot of information about the draft plan. Like, I don't think they're even at the point where they've drafted the words.
Well, there is an existing coastal plan, so this is an update to it. And they're having a meeting week on Thursday, I think, in the town hall, or one of these sort of drop-in section things.
I think it's actually sooner than that. I think it's this week.
Have I got my dates wrong?
No, you're right. Sorry, John, it's next week. Thursday, 13th of April. My mistake, it is next week.
5 o'clock in the town hall. Well, yeah. 5 till 7, 6.30, is it? Something like that.
Obviously, Māori individuals put a thing on saying that they're taking Māori land. I haven't been able to tell quite what is meant in all of it, because there's not much of an explanation either from the people who have received the maps and posted online, or actually from the council itself, what they're doing.
There was quite a helpful comment from one of the district council planners, summing up what they're trying to do.
Oh, is that this person here?
They've said that from
a different council, but yeah.
they're trying to do things like identify and map the surf breaks, the heritage, so historic things, the nature, the natural character, outstanding natural features, so that sort of rocks and all that sort of thing, the geology and such like. Indigenous biodiversity, which probably covers much the same as the natural character, and that they're looking to have ways of protecting them. They're also looking for where aquaculture might go, so that's the sort of mussel farms and things like that.
Is that actually opening things up to aquaculture, John?
Well, it could do. I mean, it depends what the plan is. At the moment, it's at the fairly early consultation stage, so it's probably going to go through several more stages before. In fact, I think somewhere on that Facebook thread, there's a plan showing what the stages are of what they're going to go through in the way of consultation.
Yeah.
But they did some initial consultation back in last June, so almost a year ago. They've now looked at those, and they're going to come back to us, as I say, a week on Thursday, and give some idea of where they're heading with this one.
Okay.
This Facebook thread, I think, has been started because they've been doing more consultation with local landowners. So if they thought, oh, maybe you've got an area that we're interested in as far as any of these things are concerned, whether it's surf breaks or heritage or nature or whatever, then we need to talk to you. So that's what they're doing at the moment.
Okay. So I've been trying to work out actually what the specific problem is that people are complaining about. I'm not entirely sure because as we say, there's like they haven't written up the actual draft plan yet. They're still consulting. But there do seem to be – it looks like there are areas so we're talking about the significant indigenous and environmental areas.
Well, the whole range of things.
No, but the specific thing here that I think – is the problem. And so some parts of the seabed close to the shore have been identified as significant, and then what they've done is they've overlaid the property boundaries over that and seen these overlaps, because the property boundaries aren't actually very accurate.
Yep.
and they've highlighted these areas of overlap. I might be wrong that that's what people are complaining about, but I think that's what it must be. They might be thinking that their land's going to be taken by the regional council, but this is land that's permanently underwater, or at least partially underwater. And where would a property boundary normally stop at the sea, John? Is it the mean high tide mark, the average high tide mark?
I think it's the mean high tide mark, yes.
Yeah,
lot of the coast is Queen's Chain. So I think that probably applies to this. There's a thin red line on here, which I haven't actually found the map I was looking for, but I think that shows
So you're looking sort of in the harbour, and you can see there is a Queen's Chain. It doesn't line up with the shore very well, does it?
Well, that's probably because when Queen Victoria started it, it did line up with the shore, but there's been erosion and deposition since then. So
yeah, that's what I'm wondering about on these maps, where I'm looking at a bit here where it looks like headlands have grown, kind of fallen away. And maybe the property boundary was drawn wrong in the first place, or maybe the land really has retracted quite a few metres. Like, that looks like 10 metres or so. But some people's property boundaries actually go out into the water according to the boundary map. But obviously, what is the legal thing there? If your property boundary actually goes out into the water, do you actually have any rights to that bit of water? Or does the overarching legislation overrule you?
There's very few places in this country where it does go into the water, but there are a few.
We're looking at one here.
As far as I know, it doesn't give you any extra rights over the water, so you don't own the fish in that area or anything like that.
Right, and you can't use it. Well, you couldn't build on it anyway, because you're not allowed to build that close to the sea regardless.
I presume it would make it easier if you wanted to build a jetty there, and you could say, I'm building a jetty on my land, but it would still need a resource consent, because it's still in the coastal marine area, which, under the existing legislation, is protected.
Okay. So, do we have any useful conclusions here? People are upset. It might not be over anything that... It might not be real land. It might not actually be land.
I think it's one of these issues which keeps cropping up in planning legislation and planning consultation as to what landowners' rights should be and what the rights of their neighbours and the general public should be.
Well, but I'm wondering if these bits of land I'm pointing at now on the screen with John that you guys can't see on the air, any of that even matters, because it's actually land that's in the sea and it doesn't, or it's property boundaries that are in the sea. It doesn't really count for anything. Or does it? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think as far as the plan was concerned, that they'd be looking at the actual nature in that area and whether there were any unusual species, like the sort of wetland birds, the bittern and the fern birds and things like that, that they might want to protect, and whether there was any proposal for development in that area. And as far as I know, that area is not being developed, but there is a plan being gradually evolved by the local hapu to look at that area and what they can do with it and how they might use it and make better use of it, improve the conservation and all that sort of thing. So
this is just land around and within the harbour?
I think so, yes.
And I say within because there's a significant peninsula in the middle of the harbour, for those of you who aren't familiar.
Yeah, Paritata.
Yeah. Okay, so all the best we can say is at least people are interested in the issue, but this is primarily about environmental protections, but also allowing for aquaculture, when that might be an issue that people are concerned about.
Well, also allowing for marinas, so that's another issue people might be concerned about.
Yes.
Because the draft plan talked about meeting future demand for marinas, and it's hard to predict what future demand is, and should future demand be met, or should it be one of those things that you look at things like the need to cut down on carbon and the need to protect fisheries and such, where I can say maybe we can't have as many marinas as people want.
This came up at some community board meeting a long time ago, and Malibu Hamilton was there, and he said local hapu would oppose the construction of marinas, I think.
Yeah, because marinas are generally for a sort of fairly wealthy elite. Most people can't afford to have a boat, or certainly not keep a boat in an expensive marina.
Yeah.
So there's that issue as well. Effectively, it's privatising a corner of the otherwise publicly available water space for a particular wealthy group.
Is it more Raglan style to have a dinghy moored in the harbour? Not moored, but on a buoy. Is that more our style, John?
Well, there's one or two around, but I'm not even sure that's the general style. Probably a kayak in your loft or garage is the more normal thing.
Yeah, true. Okay. So John has actually looked. John has actually looked at this coastal reserve plan. So let's talk about that. So you've pointed out that marinas are not for everyone, and not probably within the best interest of most of the people here.
Yep. And as far as the plan had got last year, they hadn't set out what it meant in terms of economics, whether it was actually good economics or not. And the same goes for agriculture, the sort of mussel farms and such like, salmon farms or whatever is being proposed. So, all these things, hopefully they've done a lot of work since last year. Presumably there's a few planners been working on it and thinking, what is the case here? Is there a good case for it? Is there no case for it? What's the effect on the environment? All those sort of things. So hopefully when we have this open evening next week, we'll be able to find out a bit more about that. Surfing, I should think lots of people in Raglan are concerned that the surfing is protected. There's the debate going on over what happens to the breakwater at Manu Bay. That probably comes into it as to whether that's part of the protection that's needed.
What do you mean about that, John? Because we know that when the ramp was put in, that it broke the surf break, didn't it?
There was a hollow. Yeah, the left-hand break there, yeah.
Yeah, so surfers have often thought wistfully about what it must have been like. Uh-huh. But that's, I mean, they're not going to create some regulations at regional council that would cause the ramp to have to be taken out, are they, to protect the surf break?
At the moment, the debate is whether the ramp should be improved, which might well mean lengthening it.
That seems more likely to me than
and what I just mentioned. And if it's lengthened, then it goes further into that surfing area. So there's the, and people have got a right to launch boats, but people have got a right to surf as well. So it's where these rights clash.
Right. So it's a matter. So I guess both sides of that debate they'll be wanting to submit, won't they?
Yes, and probably go along to the open evening next Thursday.
Yeah, yeah.
Not this Thursday, but the one after. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so offshore wind farms, another thing on your list, John?
Yeah, well, it's on their list. So they mentioned offshore wind farms being something that might well come up. Certainly in the UK, the wind farms haven't been onshore, they've been offshore up till now. And the same's happened around quite a bit of Europe and North America, so we can expect the same trend here. Whether that's going to have an effect on the waves that people use for surfing and whether, again, the surf breaks would be affected, there's probably more evidence needed on that as to what the effect is.
Yep. So just to point out too that the coastal plan that the regional council is talking about goes from the mean high tide mark out 12 kilometres to sea. That's the area it covers. So there was talk a while ago, John, about putting a wind farm. Was it wind farm or out to sea, was it?
There's a company, was it a year or so ago, that was proposing something, but
yeah,
but haven't heard anything of that since. And they,
was that further out than 12 k's?
It was about that distance out. In fact, you're right. No, it was about 20 k's out.
So, 20 k's, yeah. So that wouldn't govern that particular one anyway. And that would probably be insignificant to the swell.
Probably. But,
that far out.
And surfers are concerned that they get as many waves as possible. So,
well, yeah.
If there's a small effect, there'd probably be some concern.
And I'm guessing. I'm not an expert. I should reiterate that about every show.
But as I say, there are plenty of offshore wind farms now, and it should be possible to calculate what, if any, effects there are.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will be covered in the coastal plan. We keep on seeing the notices about spraying of the weeds that are around the harbour, the Spartina. That's something that will be covered by the plan. So one of the problems is that the people producing the plan and the people doing the spraying are the same regional council. So to what extent they're going to be objective on that remains to be seen.
So what's the story with Spartina? Is it in the water?
Yeah, well, it's a weedy grass that what was brought in to reclaim mudflats, and it was a bit too effective. So like many things that get brought in, it gets out of control. Gorse was supposed to be a brilliant hedge plant, but it probably is a good hedge plant, but it also spreads an awful lot.
Well, south of Christchurch, I noticed that farmers actually do use it down there, like they do in the UK, but anywhere further north of that, and it just gets out of control, as we well know up here.
Of course, fishing is another thing which is going to be in the coastal plan. The coastal plan, as drafted, said that bottom trawling, dredging and mining should be restricted or banned altogether in order to protect life on the seabed, which I imagine is something that most people in this area would support.
So that's out to 12 km. Is any of that stuff happening within that zone at the moment?
Yep. So that's a change from what has been in the coastal plan, which hasn't said much or nothing at all about the trawling, dredging or mining.
So the fishing industry will be flying into action on this one, John?
Well, I think the fishing industry is gradually coming around to the idea that maybe they need to find different ways of fishing.
Because this is just
bottom trawling does do a lot of damage to the seabed.
Yeah. So it's only talking about bottom trawling. It's not talking about stopping fishing altogether. Yeah. And if no one's allowed to bottom trawl, then competing fishing companies aren't, or fisher people aren't going to miss out because neither of them will be able to use it, I guess. I'm just thinking out loud here.
Those, I think, are the main things which are probably going to affect this area as far as the coastal plan is concerned.
Okay.
As I say, it's sort of very early stage, so it's on Thursday's the time to find out about where it is heading
Thursday next
week. What your opportunities are to have a say in it.
Yeah. Okay, have you seen, you've now seen this picture I've shown you of the walkway going out to the pontoon. That feels larger and more dominant in the landscape than I had anticipated, John, because the way that the artist's impression of what it was going to look like was drawn from an angle where you couldn't see the height or the actual length. And I must admit, I'm a bit embarrassed. I should have worked that out because I used to draw things for a living and I should have known better. When they went to do the new bridge across to Papahua, I remember seeing a plan that someone at council had come up with where you walk down the end of Bow Street and then the bridge just went straight across on an angle and it started off really high. And I was still doing a lot more drawing back then, like this something I used to do for a living. And I immediately recognised that it was going to be really high, it was going to really dominate the landscape. And I said to one of the community board members, you want to get an artist impression of that from the side so people can actually see what it looks like. I never thought about this with the pontoon, but I'm looking at something here that's at least twice the height of a person when the tide is out. That walkway.
You need to be able to walk under it at low tide as well.
And and obviously walk on it at high tide. Otherwise, what's the point? So I was not surprised. And our tides vary by 3 metres in this harbour.
Three and a half or 4 metres, yeah.
Yeah, on a bad day. So that all makes sense. Just the artist impression was done in such a way as to minimise all those. Consciously or not, I don't know, but that's a thing.
Well, the whole thing's been pushed ahead without much consultation because...
Well, no, there was. There was lots of consultation about what happened at the wharf.
Well, there was consultation about what happened with the Western Walkway. There wasn't consultation about what happened with the pontoon and the Eastern Walkway.
There was stakeholder consultation.
Yeah, well, the stakeholders had an interest in seeing it going ahead.
Yeah.
The stakeholders that they involved, they didn't involve the stakeholders who might have objected.
I can't remember the details... But, I'm aware, because this is what I used to do, that the way you draw the thing.
I agree it was drawn so that you were looking down on it, so that it didn't look all that obtrusive, say, and because it is blocking the view from the wharf along the coast.
Yeah.
So you've now got a bridge in the way of looking at that view.
Yeah, I'm kind of most annoyed with myself for not having worked that out.
As I say, there wasn't an opportunity to...
Was there a plan? There must have been a planned view of that.
Yes, there was. Well, there was a plan and a cross-section, so yes.
Yeah, I didn't pay enough attention.
So it doesn't come as a surprise to me that it looks like that, but if it comes as a surprise to other people, then maybe it's a lesson for the future as to why we ought to be involved in things like the coastal plan and the other plans which are being pushed forward at the moment.
It may be a lesson for the people who drew the artist's impression that drawing the art, doing that is successful because people didn't work out how long and how high it was going to be.
Well, that's the whole point of doing artists' impressions, isn't it? You make them look as good as possible.
True, John. Very true. Never trust an artist's impression, folks. It's a basic rule of life. Shall we move on from that? Because there's not much else to say there. It's happening. It's probably... It might be quite... It would be fun to walk out and stand on the pontoon and get a look at Raglan from a different angle.
Yeah, you probably get quite a good view of the wharf from there.
Yeah. I was thinking of other bits of the harbour, but anyway... I don't know if I need to look at the wharf from there.
And I don't know how easy it's going to be to walk along that beach now. Maybe it's going to be easier than it was, but because those rocks were sometimes quite slippery and tricky to walk over.
Well, you'd be able to walk as far as the walkway under the Pūtakawas there, but after that, then you're on your own again.
And there is a proposal to extend it and cover that area in car park. So that's another development that might take place.
Hold on, whose proposal is that?
Well, that was in some of the consultation documents saying that's a future thing that they might look at.
on the Papa Rocks there.
And if you look at the fishing club's website, their ambition is to have a marina there. So the pontoon is the start of a marina.
I feel like no one, true, it happens in stages, no one takes the idea of a marina very seriously. Every now and again someone will put a picture of a marina proposed there on the notice board just to wind people up. So, which is kind of, that kind of gives you the picture of how unlikely it feels to me that that will happen.
But if you look at the fishing club's website, it does say that they are campaigning for it.
Yeah, and the mayor has said, actually I heard the mayor saying to them, because he was at a community board, the previous mayor, he was saying, if you guys want to do that, it's all well and good telling me, but you guys, you're going to have to raise the money to do it. Like, he was quite blunt that he wasn't going to be doing it for them.
So it will help that they have free access to the launch facility at the wharf rather than having to pay for it if you're a fishing club member.
And no, it won't be free. No, they
don't
paid,
live in Raglan. Reduced rate, okay.
Reduced, yeah, and not by much. But that was what I was saying before too about this idea of a marina before we frighten people, that Malibu Hamilton at a community board meeting some time ago said local hapu would oppose that a marina and that spot there. Is that what they call the Papa Rock?
Well, it is Papa Rock, and most of Raglan's made of Papa Rock, so because it comes out of the volcanic vents.
Okay, yep. But this is specifically the area at low tide. There's quite a large flat area there that I'm referring to, just so people know where we mean. All right, shall we move on, John? Have we got anything less depressing to talk about?
Well, we've got the Waters Governance Board, so that they. They did meet last week on the 29th of March, and they were talking about the storm events that we had and saying that during the cyclone they managed not to pump sewage out into the harbour on the incoming tide, even though they had done on the previous weekend when Auckland had its storm event.
So when we say pumping sewage, we mean treated
sewage. Yeah. So they managed to keep that under control, so that's good news. They did say they needed to use a diesel pump to do it, but it managed to keep on the usual cycle.
Well, hold on. What do they use a diesel pump for?
I think it was because the power failed, so a temporary diesel pump was required for pumping from the roadside pond at the sewage works to the discharge pond due to the failure of the permanent pump, which they don't say why it failed, but I think it was probably electricity went out.
That tends to suggest to me they're taking it reasonably seriously that the community doesn't like sewage going in the harbour.
Yep.
I would say. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen, and with extreme weather events and predictions of more often and more extreme weather events in our future, you know it's going to keep happening.
Yeah, well, it's also where the planning laws come in, because they've got to consent to discharge on incoming tides, but it's very limited consent. So if they do it too often, they're going to get into trouble with regional council.
Is that the limit? Is it a certain amount of times per year?
Yes, I can't remember what it is, but it does set it, and it's fairly limited.
And if they go over that, then the regional council fines them?
Well, that's the ultimate sanction, yes.
Which did happen, didn't it, a few years ago?
Yeah.
And then, of course, what's happening, of course, is we're paying for it. Well, one council that we pay the rates to is fine, and the other council that we pay rates to, and I know the regional council recognised that situation and said that the money we get will be put into our area. So it's mostly just a significant slap on the wrist for the district council, like an embarrassment, I guess.
Yes. So they're trying to avoid that, and of course they're working on the new sewage plans, which I noticed that there's a council meeting coming up. So that's going to be, it's got a couple of things about the Waters Governance Board on its agenda, which are going to be discussed with the public excluded. So my guess is that one of them is probably what they're going to do with the Raglan sewage, whether they're going to, how much they're going to spend on it and things like that.
Well, they had said it, they put money aside a while ago, didn't they?
Well, they were talking about 14 million, but they were also saying that was probably an underestimate. So,
well, it certainly will be now.
And that the district council, of course, is also, well, both councils are looking at their long-term plans, so those are coming up. So that's going to be part of their feeding into the spending in the long-term plan as well.
Yeah. Many things to spend money on, and not enough money is going to be the story of this.
Well, that's why Three Waters was being proposed, and of course government's having a review of that to decide how it goes about it and whether it's got the money to do it.
The main reason they're having the review is because it's become very bad publicity for the government all around the co-governance issue, and all of that's got nothing to do with the fact that our Three Waters systems are actually decaying from several decades of underfunding because of the neoliberal economic model. If you can hear anyone, that's Katie from the Environment Centre shouting outside. Listeners. She's just seen someone. The whole Three Waters thing frustrates me because there's a huge uproar. No one's even talking about the one thing that they need to talk about, which is that the whole thing was invented because the government has an unwritten policy of not going over a certain amount of borrowed money. Both National and Labour are in agreement about it. It really gets talked about, and it's an ideological economic position from the neoliberal era, and we end up with decaying infrastructure because of the ideology.
Yeah, because another part of the report says that they're hoping to get some money out of the Department of Internal Affairs to go towards the sewage upgrade. But at the moment, they've set aside $14,720,000 for it. So that's the current budget. But they're also still doing design and doing geotech investigations.
Do you think, John, that the councils of all, well, maybe our council anyway, was hoping that if Three Waters goes through, and it goes through soon, if they could just stop spending money on the sewage system and put it into other things, because they're not even going to be able to keep the sewage system under their domain, under that old proposal.
Well, most of the money comes out of targeted rates, so we pay a targeted rate for sewage, and if this goes ahead, then that targeted rate presumably is going to rise, so, and it's got a separate budget of its own.
Okay, I'll forget that. Well, I'll not forget it, but...
One of the other things
let's just say it must be hard for the council to think about spending seriously on things like that when they're not even sure that they're going to have control over those things. If they create these bodies to run the Three Waters?
Well, they've lost some control of it, and they've given it to Watercare to look after, so it's not directly a council thing anymore. It's like the alliance with the roads that they semi-privatised that, and they've not semi-privatised, it's being run by Auckland's authority. Well, in fact, the parks are the same, aren't they? They're being run by Christchurch Authority, but as far as the sewage is concerned, Watercare, which is basically an Auckland organisation, is running our sewage. And one of the good bits of news again is that they're still doing CCTV surveys of the pipes. So looking at what condition they're in, and they say they've done the Daisy Street, Wallace Street area, and done some patching and sleeve relining, which presumably means that we're going to be getting less stormwater getting into the pipes when we have heavier rain.
So what conclusion did we get to on this? They have been working hard over the last 10 or 15 years to try to stop water getting into the sewage pipes, but still lots of it is getting in. And in fact, I think I tried to have a private conversation with someone from Watercare after a community board meeting. I think it's normal for water to get into the sewage system. I don't think we're ever going to be able to stop it, but they have to keep working on it. But yeah, I don't think
it's how much gets in rather than that it does get in.
Yeah.
I don't think you're ever going to stop every single drop of water that comes out of the sky getting into the sewage works, but you can certainly improve it a lot if you don't have pipes that leak all the time. And of course, if pipes leak, then sewage can leak out of them as well as water leaking into them, which is probably a more serious problem.
Yeah. Okay. I'm getting lost in all this, John. What else have we got?
the only other thing that I noticed was that, two things actually. One is that hidden in the minutes of the last council meeting, there was some grumbling about the Raglan cycleways, and some of the councillors were saying, they've been spending staff time on applying for money from the government to build these cycleways, and it's taken away staff from other projects that they were interested in getting done. And we were talking about the warfare there. It just occurs to me that nobody's ever grumbled about the time that staff have spent on getting funding for the wharf. So you have cycleways being built and councillors grumble about it, and you have the wharf being built and councillors don't grumble about it. Maybe I'm being paranoid.
Are these conservative councillors? I feel like that could be in that particular scenario. But you could also say an environmental fanatic councillor might grumble the other way. So
I think they're just councillors who don't come from this area, which is 13 out of the 14 councillors. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll ignore them then. They can go and grumble and we'll just ignore them. the cycleways, that reminded me, my interview with Dennis Amor yesterday, there is a trails bylaw or strategy or something being reviewed soon?
The trails strategy comes up every 5 years or so, and the council comes up with these wonderful plans for where walkways and cycleways are going to go, and then they rarely get on with doing anything. They just say it's a plan for if anyone wants to develop something, then they've got to develop it so that if they ever did get round to doing a walkway or cycleway, it would be compatible with it.
So let's project forward 50 years to where the Raglan population is 12,000 people, and we've got places, and there's houses all round. When we look up at farmland now, it's all full of houses. Are there trails in those areas, John? Potential trails? And would the developers be asked to actually develop the trails in the process?
Well, certainly Rangitahi has been developed with cycleways all over it.
Yeah.
The quality of the cycleway seems to me to be pretty poor. But most people, given the choice of using a cycleway or using the road, would probably use the road to cycle on.
Where's the cycleway?
Well, the problem is that cycleways stop for every side road, whereas when you're on a main road, you don't stop for every side road. Which, if you're sort of with a sort of 5-year-old kid and teaching them how to cycle, then that's a great idea. But if you're trying to get somewhere on a bike and use it as a forms of transport rather than just to sort of potter around, then it's not good.
Okay.
So that's my objection to the way that the cycleways have been done up till now. But yeah, to that extent, cycleways are being included.
So they're not separate cycleways, they're just bits beside the road.
Well, it's a widened footpath, yes.
Okay.
Which is what they're doing along Wainui Road.
But that's not a trail strategy, though, that sort of thing, is it?
Well, no. And it's not like the sort of Central Otago Rail Trail or the various other trails that exist around the country. There are plans to have a... Well, on the map, there's a cycleway which stretches from Tuakau all the way down the west coast, pretty much, including Raglan and including taking a ferry across to Te Ako. So
that'd be a hell of a ride.
It's a very attractive ride, and there's very little traffic on that road, but it's sort of not developed as a cycleway. Whether it ever will be, it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the future, but certainly there aren't any plans to develop it at the moment.
Okay. All right. Is there anything of significance then that you think people might want to do with that trail strategy? I guess the horse people will be interested, and the cycle groups.
Yep, because all the roads used to be places for horses to be exercised, but as we've had more and more traffic, it's become more and more difficult. And of course, we've just had the consultation hearing on the public places bylaw takes place next week, so be interested to see whether the horse people turn up to that and object to the further restrictions on using horses on roads that are in that plan.
Yeah.
But it does mean that they've got very few places to actually exercise horses, apart from just riding them round and round their paddocks. So,
actually, that's an interesting angle on that, the new those new bylaw rules, that it's entrenching the primacy of cars on roads. I was just reading something the other day about how kids used to just come out and play in the street. Everywhere was a playground. Uh-huh. And now you have to take your kids to a special place for them to play. And we think that's normal. But it's better for our sense of community for kids to be able to just go out the front of the house and play with the other kids over the road and things like that. And we did that in some places where I lived as a kid because it was pretty safe. But more and more, like, you know, because those rules were saying, like, no skateboards, no roller skates, no scooters, nothing at all except a car on a road. And it's not really that, actually, I didn't think about that at the time, John, but that really doesn't fit into community living that we might like to have in our community at all.
Yep. Well, that's the case that I put to them in the submission. We'll see what they make of it.
Why did that just occur to me now? Never mind. Life goes on.
These restrictions are gradually coming in, because there was a campaign back in the 1920s to get people to accept most cars and to accept that we had to have traffic rules to sort of look left, look right, and then cross if it was safe to cross. Whereas up till then, people just sort of wandered across the road.
And it was very much considered the driver's job not to crash into them. I mean, it is also considered that now, but it's kind of different.
But now you've got all the rules that say if the pedestrian hasn't behaved themselves, then it's their fault rather than the driver's fault. So, yeah.
And that was probably, was that from lobbying from the auto,
from
auto,
AA and people like that?
The auto industry, yeah. Basically. Yeah, okay. John, are we stopping, or we've only got 8 minutes left? And
well, whilst we're on transport, might as well mention that, not surprising, bus patronage is down. So this is from a couple of weeks ago. The Regional Transport Committee had a report, although the number of passengers is down, the buses are even less reliable than they used to be. So the number of buses on the Raglan route that are on time has gone down from 46.9% to 40.8%. So.
But is that during the, while State Highway 23 was closed?
No, that's the end of last year.
Oh, really?
So, that figure is going to change again with the closure of the State Highway. But as I say, the patronage had gone down from 20,000 to 15,000. And the timekeeping had gone down in that period by 6%.
But what's that compared to? Like,
well, it's amongst the worst of the timekeeping.
I'm saying that the number of people have gone, the patronage gone down. Over what period is that?
Oh, that's from one quarter to another, so over one three-month period to another three-month period.
During last year?
Yes.
Why would it change that much? There was no, we don't have any more COVID restrictions.
I think people were concerned about COVID still at that time.
What, the end of last year?
Yes. As far as, I must admit, my recollection on COVID restrictions is getting a bit hazy now.
They ended at about this time last year.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because generally public transport patronage is down. You look at the graphs for Auckland and Wellington, and they show a similar pattern. So people are still concerned about using public transport and the spread of COVID.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll accept that that's the case. I don't know what else there is, John.
Well, it seems to me that one of the things they've still not looked at, particularly in Hamilton, is giving any priority to buses. So the on-time obviously that isn't greatly affected by what happens in Hamilton, but there are some of that percentage of buses not running to time is due to the traffic jams in Hamilton. And I think some buses actually run ahead of time. So the one that I caught at the weekend was about 5 minutes ahead of schedule. And they count buses not running on time as being either those which are more than a minute early or those which are more than 5 minutes late.
Well, early is not very helpful for people either. In fact, it's worse.
You can never tell whether the bus is going to be 5 or 10 minutes early or whether it's going to be 15 or 20 minutes late.
So, like, if they pull up to a bus stop, like one, there's a couple on Monaco Road, several, are they just going to be early, arrive early and leave early? Or do they stay till the exact time?
Well, it depends on the driver. Some drivers stop and wait until they're on time and some don't.
Well, that's a bit off. That's a bit off, John. That's
ideally, they'd publicise who was driving and you'd then know whether the bus was going to be early
that's
or
actually,
late.
That's pretty nasty. Like if you're 10 minutes early and you just go again, like no one, how many people turn up to the bus 10 minutes early? Or you'll need to. Can we just move on from that, though? I want to talk about this. Community planting at Ed Hillary Hope Reserve. Do you know about that, John?
Well, they've been restoring that reserve ever since it was bought by the tree trusts in 2014, I think, was it? Most of it is already in native bush, which is why they acquired it.
Yeah.
But there were also some parts of it which were previously farmland. So
this reserve goes from the divvy and rolls up over and back down towards...
Well, both sides of the divvy up at the top belong to the tree trust.
And it's alongside the Waitatuna Valley? Does it sort of run through
yes.
there?
Yes. Well, it's got Old Mountain Road on one side, and then it goes up past the divvy and towards Cogswell Road on the other side.
Okay. All right. That's the area there. I saw that, and I thought, we should mention that that's been happening, because that's a nice thing.
So, yeah, the Native Tree Restoration Trust has been working on that and getting people involved in it. They've had grants from Regional Council. They've had help from all sorts of groups, and this is another bit of their publicity to try and make people aware of the reserve being there and that they're welcoming anyone who wants to help with doing some planting up there.
Right, they've got the Kiwi Conservation Club families and Waikato Forest and Bird. And who's in that picture? Waitatuna School Planting Day. So, yeah, lots of people getting involved in that. And can I also ask about the Wainui Reserve? Because you're on the Friends of Wainui Reserve.
Yep.
And that, for people who don't know, that was just farmland when the Friends of Wainui Reserve started working, wasn't it? And that whole... The bush reserve has been planted by them, is that
well,
accurate?
Well, again, like the Hillary Hope Reserve, it was mostly farmland, but there were some areas of bush, so some of it's never been anything but bush, but it's obviously been heavily logged and things like that, so it's all either secondary growth or relatively new growth since 1993 when Friends of Wainui started planting up that area.
Yeah, and still planting or just maintaining now?
Well, there's still a few areas to plant up, and there's still people who want to put in memorial trees and plaques.
Right.
So to that extent, there's limited planting going on.
Who gets to put in a memorial tree?
People who pay $160.
Okay, so if your family member has passed,
yes.
You can put a tree and a little plaque. I have seen those, yeah.
And there have been some complaints. It's beginning to look more like a cemetery than a park.
Not really.
Or a bush park. So there are limits on where they can go, like along the memorial walkway. But that's we're still doing regular work parties there to try and keep the weeds under control mostly, but also to do some tree planting.
Yeah,
because there's still areas where the gorse could do with shading out.
How did it cope? I know there's been times when it's flooded down there. How did it cope during the cyclone? I haven't heard anything.
The stream didn't rise very much then. About 6 years ago, there was a much more major flood down that valley.
Didn't it float some plant? You just planted some trees and they floated back out of the holes in the ground you dug?
Yeah, that was about 6 years ago.
Yeah. So it wasn't like that this time?
No.
Okay.
It just about broke its banks in some places, but mostly it stayed within the normal stream line.
Okay, that's not a lot of stuff.
Because I think we came off quite lightly in this area in the cyclone, because other places, even Wainaro, got flooded, but we didn't.
That's what makes the slip on State Highway 23 even more so unusual.
Well, I think it's that area that did get the heavy rain and we missed out on it.
Oh, okay. I was wondering, though, like, because that road's been there for decades and decades. I was trying to think what's changed that didn't used to be there. And all I can think of is that there were mature pine trees that were cut down a few years ago and there's just little saplings there at the moment. And that's the only thing I can think of that changed.
Well, also erosion is a gradual process, so it gradually takes place over time.
I guess it accelerated while the pines were being logged. That would have been approximately 4 years ago.
Yes, it could have had an effect, I don't know, because at the moment they're still building up the wall to support the road there, so they appear to be making quite good progress with it.
It's interesting.
It's a good reason for catching double-decker bus. You can actually see from up there what's going on.
Oh, yeah, because I got that fence up. Yeah, I drove through there on the weekend. They're saying that they hope to have that repaired by May. And you think, well, so that's 3 months. We could have. How much of a big deal is it between 1 month and 3 months of having that road closed, given how much work they had to do to create that the slip road around it? Well, it's not a slip road, just a little bypassy thing, the detour.
It did seem to me to be excessively long time to keep it closed when they could have done a much rougher road and had a temporary speed limit over it, which would maybe have taken 5 minutes longer, but not,
also,
not the half hour longer that it took.
Yeah, I know. But I'm also looking at the idea that it took a month and they spent a lot of money and made a new road, which is only going to be used for 2 months. So that actually speaks to how important roads are to our world that we live in. Like, there was no question concerned that was the number, and that was the number one access to Raglan was the number one priority in the district.
Yeah, well, that's why the government's changing its spending priorities, because it's putting lots of money into restoring roads. And
yeah, it shows how dependent.
If they're spending money that way everywhere, then it shows that maybe they're not doing it the most economical way.
Well, I think it just shows how dependent we are on roads in this country. We're so dependent, I know that, but it kind of reinforced it for me. Like, it made it kind of stark, because people used to live. Roads weren't that kind of an issue. They weren't dependent. We weren't dependent on roads like that.
Well, we've become dependent on roads because it's the only area that's been invested in for the last century.
Yes.
And we had that discussion when we were talking about the history of 1923, a century ago, that they changed the way that the funding was done, and they were still expecting railways to pay a huge dividend, and they were expecting taxpayers and ratepayers to subsidise roads. So, a completely different way of looking at the funding for two competing forms of transport. And,
so
of course, shipping missed out altogether as well. So, and that they were just left as private operators who gradually went out of business. So,
went for container ships.
Well, even that, not usually for coastal shipping.
Well, we can't get a container ship on the West Coast.
Because they've been struggling with Gisborne and trying to get freight from Napier to Gisborne without using the roads.
Yeah, and they're calling it a blue highway, for God's sakes. There's nothing more revealing about our state of minds about transport. It's a blue highway. It's just the ocean, folks. It's not a blue highway.
Well, it depends on having decent shipping facilities at Gisborne to actually accept it, and to have enough capacity at Napier to deal not just with the ordinary container shipping, but also with this extra.
They might have to consider that for future civil defence emergencies. If we're going to have more and more of this, at some point they're probably going to say, "Oh, okay, every time there's an emergency, let's just have our boats ready, and we're going to service the country that way." Because we're kind of unique compared to most countries. We've got this coastline, we've got harbours all around the coast, everywhere.
Yeah, because I don't know how we would cope if the road bridge between Tiuku and the substation at the Wainaro Turning was washed away. So there's that stretch of road where if it was washed out, the only alternative is to go around via Kafia.
Yeah. Or is there someone's farmland we could go over, John?
Well, if that bridge was washed out, you'd need to replace the bridge, and I suppose they could get a Bailey Bridge in within a week or so, but it would certainly be a problem for a week at least.
Yeah, yes.
And hopefully that civil defence plan that keeps being talked about will look at things like that. And
so I talked with Dennis Amor yesterday about that, and they had a meeting recently about that he's determined to get it through. They are looking at Raglan needs to be able to survive for 3 days, is what he said. But as you say, if that bridge went out, maybe that would be longer than 3 days.
Because until the 1920s, we had a weekly freight service coming in from Onehunga, but we no longer got that coastal connection.
That's 100 years ago, John, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and that would be... I mean, I can understand them wanting to use the coast to access the communities up the east coast, but here on the west coast, it's our harbours. I don't know. I don't know if it's worse. It seems unlikely. Anyway,
yeah,
we've gone over
something to debate when the civil defence plan finally comes out. Yeah.
All right. So, folks, we've been talking to John. John's on the air again tonight with more details at 6.
Yep, be looking in probably a slightly different way at the things we've just been talking about.
The regional council, the regional coastal plan, perhaps?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, John, thanks for coming in.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, folks, end of the show for the day. I hope you got something out of it. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.